Thank you for tuning in to IGH 260, a one chapter per week, 260 week, 5 year long study of the New Testament. Today's broadcast, lesson number 3 of week number 8, studying Matthew chapter 8. As we get started, this reminder, our programs and study materials are freely downloadable when you click the free menu at internationalgospelhour.com. If you are interested in learning more about God's Word, let me encourage you to consider enrolling in our completely free, self-paced online study. To get started right away, just go to igh.worldbibleschool.org, or you can click the online courses link at our website, internationalgospelhour.com. If you prefer to study by mail, we encourage you to call this toll-free number, 1-855-IGH-6988, in order to receive our free 30-lesson Bible study series. Let's get into God's Word, Matthew chapter 8, today. We take up where we left off in our prior study. Jesus was preparing to go to the Roman centurion's home in order to heal his servant. In that context, the centurion said this, "Lord, I am not worthy that you should come under my roof, but only speak a word, and my servant will be healed. For I also am a man under authority, having soldiers under me. And I say to this one, go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes. And to my servant, do this, and he does it." Matthew chapter 8, verses 8 and 9. We have already considered what the centurion meant by calling Jesus Lord. At the very end of our last study, we had just started to think more about why the centurion stated that he was not worthy. We noted that Isaiah saw God on the throne and realized that he, that's Isaiah, was not worthy, Isaiah chapter 6. That seems to parallel the poor in spirit principle that we saw earlier in our studies of the first chapter of the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5. Gentile or not, this centurion had a high regard for Jesus, and he was appropriately circumspect concerning his own worth before the Lord. John the Baptizer, not at all a Gentile and a divinely approved prophet of God, also regarded himself as not worthy to carry the sandals of he who is coming after me, Matthew chapter 3, verse 11. Paul used the same term with reference to his worth as an apostle. "For I am the least of the apostles, who am not worthy to be called an apostle, because I persecuted the church of God." 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 9. The idea of unworthiness comes across fairly clearly in 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 5. We read there these words, "Not that we are sufficient of ourselves to think of anything as being from ourselves, but our sufficiency is from God." Here, the two terms rendered as sufficient and sufficiency, both translated from the same root as the words worth and worthy, they show us that our unworthiness, spiritually speaking, always appears as a measure of how we compare to God. We do not fully measure up. We never fully measure up when compared to God. That does not mean that we have no worth at all. Matthew 16:26 teaches that our soul has greater value than the whole world. That our soul has great worth in that perspective does not, however, mean that we are ever on par with God. The term worthy means meeting a standard, fit, appropriate, competent, qualified, able, with a connotation worthy, good enough. God's standards are high. They have always been high. That we fail to meet them perfectly does not automatically consign us to hell. It does mean, though, that we can only be acceptable to God when righteousness has been accounted to us, counted in our favor because of the atoning death of His Son, Jesus Messiah. Our ultimate spiritual worth will only be conveyed when we, as Matthew chapter 10, verse 38 enjoins, take up our cross and follow after Jesus. And even then, we must not assume that in doing so, following Jesus, we merit redemption. Note also that the centurion came on behalf of someone else. In this, the centurion demonstrated a Christ's kingdom disciple trait, which of course means that the centurion demonstrated a Christ-like trait. He acted selflessly in behalf of another, and he did so, as did the leper, risking something. As a Roman centurion, he came before a Jewish rabbi. He came before a teacher. He came before a healer. All of these things were probably counter to what he, as a Roman centurion, would normally believe and act on. And yet, he came anyway. And it appears that he came for the sole benefit of his servant and not for himself. We are about to see what impact that this had on Jesus. But before we do so, consider this. What impact did the centurion's coming to Jesus have on the multitudes who witnessed this? What did they think when they saw a Roman centurion coming to Jesus? What did they think when they heard his plea? What did they think when they saw his compassion? Did they think, he's a Roman soldier? What's he doing coming to Jesus? And what did his fellow soldiers think? What's he doing? This does not look dignified. A Roman centurion coming before a Jewish itinerant faith healer? You can imagine them thinking, this centurion represents the power and the might of Rome. We rule the world. We are the Roman Empire. And this man Jesus, he's a little-known rabbi from this middle-of-nowhere has-been nation. And yet, the centurion still came to Jesus, and he still came to Jesus in behalf of another. The centurion, like the leper, recognized something about the power of Jesus, but the centurion did so in a very unique way. Unlike the leper, who had almost no influence, no power, no authority, this centurion had all of them, and he said so. He told those under him what to do, and they did it. He said that not to brag about the influence and power and control that he had, but rather to demonstrate that in spite of such power, he was powerless to help his servant. Moreover, the centurion realized that Jesus had the power that he lacked. And like the soldiers who had to submit to his will, the centurion readily recognized that he had to submit to the will of Jesus. Nothing else would do. In this, the centurion appears to have met the characteristics depicted in those who mourn, meaning those who mourn for others, as well as the character of those who are the poor in spirit, realizing that he was disadvantaged both physically and spiritually to heal his servant. And that caught the attention of the Christ. The text says that Jesus marveled. The original term expressed as marveled here appears in translations as astonished, heard him with astonishment, amazed, surprised, did wonder, and impressed. It means to be extraordinarily impressed or disturbed by something. The term can be used with either a good or a bad meaning. The word often appears in concert with a statement, that is, a verbal statement expressing something about the phenomenon that was just witnessed. For example, in Matthew chapter 8, verse 27, after Jesus quieted the winds and the sea, a miracle that we will discuss later in our studies of Matthew 8, those who witnessed that wonder not only marveled, they were prompted to say something about it. The text says, "So the men marveled, saying, 'Who can this be, that even the winds and the sea obey him?'" In Matthew 9:33, after Jesus cast out a demon, the multitudes marveled, saying, "It was never seen like this in Israel." The same thing occurred in Matthew 21:20 concerning the apostles' remarks at the withered fig tree. It occurred again in John 7:15 to those who marveled because Jesus never studied letters. And it also appears in Acts 2:7 when the Pentecost audience, described as amazed and marveled, heard Galileans, the apostles, speak in other languages. That same sense of marvel appears here. But this time, it was Jesus who marveled. The text says, when Jesus heard it, he marveled and said to those who followed, "Assuredly, I say to you, I have not found such great faith, not even in Israel." Matthew chapter 8, verse 10. Jesus not only marveled, but, As in the previous examples just noted, Jesus said something expressing that sentiment. There are only two other accounts in the New Testament where Jesus did so, both, of course, in the gospel records. One of those accounts, Luke chapter 7, verse 9, parallels this passage. The third account, Mark chapter 6, verse 6, does not reflect a parallel setting. There, Jesus marveled at the unbelief of the people in the town of Nazareth. Three quick thoughts before continuing. First, it was a real-life example that prompted Jesus to marvel in each of these contexts. Second, two of those accounts depicting the same incident and thus the same response by Jesus was positive. Jesus marveled that the Roman centurion believed that Jesus could heal his servant from a distance. And third, the last account, it was anything but positive. It too provides us with a real life example of faith. Only here, it was a real life example of what faith should not be. Jesus marveled that the residents of Nazareth were characterized not by positive faith, but rather by their unbelief. The opening verses of Mark 6 provide a more detailed discussion as to how and why they felt this way. When they heard Jesus teach, rather than listening to and learning from his teaching, they focused on the Jesus they knew from the past. To them, Jesus was, and remained, the son of Mary, and the brother of James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon, and their sisters. They did not grasp that this Jesus could be anything more than who he was in the past. The end result? They were offended at him. There's much more to be said about faith, both positive and negative, as we continue our study. As just noted, Jesus did not just marvel. Jesus overtly expressed that sense of wonder. Hear again his words. "Assuredly, I say to you, I have not found such great faith, not even in Israel." Matthew 8, verse 10. Jesus did not just marvel. Jesus did not just verbally express amazement. Jesus also told those who followed, remember the multitudes, why he marveled. This man, this Roman soldier, a centurion, a man of rather substantial authority, this man demonstrated great faith, a faith that, according to Jesus, was not usually found, not even in Israel. In our next broadcast, we will take up at this point and continue our study of Matthew chapter 8. A reminder as we conclude, for a free online Bible study, go to igh.worldbibleschool.org or click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com. We hope that you can join us as we study God's Word together in our next broadcast.